Hello, Jeremy here. Just before we start the podcast, just quick notes. We didn't have much of a chat about the other problems that Dutton is going to face potentially if he becomes leader this morning, although he seems to be demanding a ballot but not having the numbers to actually force it on, which implies that he's not going to win it. Very weird. But one of the big things that we didn't mention was that there's a problem that he may be in breach of Section 44 in that he has that financial interest in those childcare centres. Which, you know, if you can't be a teacher and be an MP, having a financial interest in childcare centres that get money from the Commonwealth, surely that qualifies. He says he has advice from a lawyer that says that he's safe, but so did everyone else who was kicked out by the High Court under Section 44. So, not very valuable. So, Labor is now challenging that. They have written to the Attorney General saying that it's at least clearly arguable that he's ineligible and it needs to go to the High Court. The other problem he has is this issue when he quickly got an visa for an au pair in like 2 hours, and Roman Quadleg, the former head of Border Force, he said that he has knowledge of what Dutton did internally in relation to that. So there are some serious problems for Dutton in relation to both of those. Labor is referring his au pair visa decision to a Senate inquiry, pushing for an investigation of allegations concerning the inappropriate exercise of ministerial powers. So there's the other aspect that we didn't get to, which is that if Dutton does become Prime Minister, he has two major problems that are hitting him at the very beginning. The rest of the discussion is still at the point that I'm recording this at 9:20, still current. The only other thing that we didn't mention, which I really wanted to and I forgot, was the spectacular own of Chris Kenny, where he's whinging about journos being backgrounded and tweeting about it. His tweet was, "Journos tweeting after every phone call or text message, hashtag spare me." On Wednesday afternoon, to which at Paggles Oz replied, "Don't worry, someone's bound to call or text you sooner or later." Boom. Now on with the podcast.
Well, may we say, God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 61 for Thursday, 23rd of August, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host to help me discuss what's been happening to our country, what's likely to happen, and hopefully what we can do about it. Tonight's guest host, which you might have guessed from if I managed to sort of splice in some something wonky music, it's Dave Gorkroger.
Yeah, that introduction sounds very, very much like the one that I wrote from Something Wonky all those years ago. I think you'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Well, first of all, no, it's actually different. But yes, it certainly does.
It's not different enough.
It follows the pattern by identifying the name of the podcast, saying what the episode is, and like what the date of the episode is. You're right, there are some similarities. I suppose I could start the podcast by just screaming abuse at the audience, just to distance itself from Something Wonky.
Wait, you do you.
Look, mate. Look, I might give that a go. Look, I don't want to hear from your copyright lawyers. Mm. Although you know that, you know, after you left Something Wonky, I kept doing the Something Wonky intro for quite a long time.
It was 4 weeks. 4 weeks.
What? No. There was like a year where you were. Anyway, Look. This is not the conflict we're talking about tonight. It's not the conflict between former Something Wonky hosts.
I'm pretty confident. I am pretty confident that if we went to a vote of Something Wonky listeners, I would comprehensively be the leader. That's all I'm saying. I think you're going to need to flip more than 7 listeners to take control of Something Wonky. That's all I have to say on the matter. Was it the iron laws of arithmetic have already decided?
This is a bloody coup in my own podcast. What the?
You can lead this third party podcast anywhere you want. I'm just saying.
I was elected to lead this podcast for an entire 3-year term. Okay, so we're all a tiz because there is a risk that we will have Peter Dutton as Prime Minister tomorrow.
You know, not only that, if he does win it, Jeremy, and look, there's lots of obvious reasons why having Peter Dutton as the Prime Minister of Australia would be a horrible, horrible thing. But
well, I presume he's going to kill all the Muggleborns, isn't he? Like, that'll be the first thing.
Have you thought about the fact that as a former Prime Minister, he would be entitled to all the stuff like an office, a staff, and a travel pass, and all that sort of stuff for life, meaning that we would just never be rid of him, ever.
I'm not sure.
Ever.
I have to double check what they've changed the entitlements to, but I think you had to be for like a year before you got all that stuff, like the gold card and all that stuff.
Well, I know that they
Howard and Latham changed it all, obviously.
No, they didn't. It was Abbott who tried to change all that because he wanted to stiff Gillard.
That's right.
Which is kind of hilarious, given that he didn't actually spend as much time at PM as she did. But I don't think he got away with it. But I can't remember. I don't know. I haven't been watching politics for the last 61 episodes. You say you've had on this. So how long have you been doing this? 2 years now?
Something like that.
Yeah. I haven't been paying attention to politics for 2 years.
You say, look, I know you're negging me because really you secretly listen to every episode of Well Maybe We Say, and you're just like, it's not a power move to admit how much of a fan of this podcast you are. So I get it. It's fine, mate. You don't have to pretend
sorry,
to me.
Sorry, but no, I just haven't been paying attention to politics. I'm sorry. But Peter Dutton, Jeremy, look.
So I already thought the Prime Ministership had been tainted enough that it had had a Tony Abbott in it. But like being Prime Minister of Australia is now, if Peter Dutton becomes Prime Minister of Australia, that is a worthless honour from now on. The whole idea that a Prime Minister is called the Right Honourable. The Right Honourable Peter Dutton? No. Those words should, like, cause an explosion.
Well, it just amazes me. And look, here's the thing. I'm sure he strongly believes that he has all of the qualifications to be an excellent PM. I mean, as he was saying to people the other day, you know, he can smile. That's fantastic.
Well, specifically when he's joking about like Pacific Islands going under,
yeah,
due
to climate change. But
like, it's funny because they're all going to drown, and their nations aren't going to exist anymore.
What's even funnier is the fact that they're going to become refugees, and they're probably going to head towards Australia, and then we get to lock them in camps. So I mean, that's just hilarious because goodness knows they'll probably have to come by boat. But not just that. Actually, I can't.
They're going to have to travel around their own islands by boat. Like, they're not like not the between island bit, but the actual island itself, which won't be an island anymore. Like,
The list of reasons why Peter Dutton would be a horrible Prime Minister is very, very long. But here's the thing: I don't believe that everyone who is supporting him in this bid to topple Malcolm Turnbull genuinely wants him to be Prime Minister. At least not in the long term.
You think they just hate Malcolm, and he seems to be the torture. Like, I'm maybe Dutton is. Maybe they just live in an echo chamber where Dutton is bizarrely popular because he's a fascist potato. I mean, he stands for everything evil in the Liberal Party. Like, so within the evil echo chamber, he's the man to unite behind. I guess like. If you genuinely think that it's important to have a leader who can stand up there and say in one breath, I stopped the boats, as if that was a good thing, and then in the next breath, we need to guard against compassion because the boats are still coming. You're like, how are those two things? How did you not explode when you said those two things? Like, there's someone... He admits that boats are coming, but his whole pitch is, I stopped the boats. And the media just repeat it.
Well, no, hang on, mate. What you're missing is that the boats are only coming when the ALP have a particularly positive news poll, right? Whenever news poll isn't out, there's no boats around. It's only when it looks like there's a chance that Bill Shorten may become the next Prime Minister that all of a sudden we have to be reminded that those boats, Jeremy, they are just sitting out there. They are waiting. They're
actually still coming.
They are, Jeremy, they're not. They're on the verge of Australia's migration zone, just waiting for the second that Anthony Green declares that Bill Shorten is the Prime Minister of Australia, at which point thousands of those boats will simultaneously try to reach our shores, Jeremy. That's how it works. And it's only the pure force of Peter Dutton that is keeping them at bay as we speak.
There's not even that much distance between his stop the boats lie and his admitting that it's not. Like, remember back in June when he was saying, you know, we must guard against compassion. And good work, Australia, putting a man who genuinely thinks that compassion is the thing that you should guard against. You're considering making him Prime Minister. Good work there. No, he was saying, amongst, it's not the time to take our foot off the throat of this threat, which is disturbingly violent language from that man. But anyway, he says, the boats are there, we are scuttling boats, we are returning people, and we are turning around boats. The boats haven't gone away. He admits, the boats haven't gone away. So how have you stopped the boats and they haven't gone away? That doesn't make any sense.
I do think that perhaps part of the reason that they're even talking about the existence of boats is that, as anyone who paid attention knows, Scott Morrison's whole stopping the boats nonsense was purely sleight of hand. It was the on water matters decision.
Yeah, we stopped talking about the boats.
We will no longer talk about boats. It's not safe. We can't do it. And I suspect that Peter Dutton has probably, I don't want to give him too much credit, but I suspect either he has figured out or someone has pointed out to him that when they lose the next election, the ALP will also be able to refuse to talk about boats because of on water matters. At which point you will no longer be able to have Ray Hadley playing his fucking foghorn every time the Department of Immigration announces that a boat has been intercepted, because they're not going to announce it anymore. The Liberal Party's own dishonesty is going to be used against them the next time that there's an ALP government. And so no wonder he's bringing up the boats are still coming, because it's the only Trump card in his hand.
Well, he's also got the rampant xenophobia of, there are African gangs roaming Melbourne. Totally. Dave, I presume that, obviously you heard this, I accidentally mentioned it in the last two episodes, one playing the audio and the other one doing my own version of it, because I'd forgotten that we'd already played the audio of Chris Pine when he was asked about, was he afraid to go to a restaurant in Melbourne? And it's like, why? What? No, should I be? Oh, that thing. Right. Yeah, no.
Well, Jeremy, you know that the only reason that I haven't been down to visit you is just that I'm terrified of the gang warfare that's going on down there. And I can't put myself at that kind of safety risk.
So that the thing that terrifies me about Dutton becoming Prime Minister next, like, obviously they're going to have an election soon, and I suspect that Dutton would have to call one pretty quickly anyway. He won't be able to do anything in the few months before the election has to be called in.
Well, this is provided he could even hang on to a majority in the Parliament.
Yeah, because Malcolm might go, fuck you, I'm off.
Well, not just that.
I bought this Prime Ministership and I can't believe you stole it back from me.
You've also got Darren Chester from the National Party, who has said that he will sit on the crossbench should Peter Dutton become Prime Minister. So while I'm sure that, you know, they would not endanger supply or anything else like that, and they would still continue to vote with the Libs or, you know, almost every single time. Just the fact that Dutton would have to go to Chester and on each piece of legislation try to get him to sign on to it before he brought it to the floor, in itself, I think, could be enough to frustrate him to the point where he'd be ready to just, you know, pull the pin, go to an election.
Can you imagine that campaign? All Dutton has is fear and lies and xenophobia.
It would be Abbott 2013 all over again. It would be maps with arrows talking about boats. It would be shady footage lifted from the Daily Mail of gangs in Melbourne. It would just be an utter horror show.
And can you imagine the 2019 budget if they were to win the first budget back? It would be like a repeat of the 2014 budget. It would, and the company tax cuts would be right back. Like, it's this whole line, people are like, well, the media coverage about this has been beyond vacuous. Like, I was sitting in a doctor's surgery yesterday, and Channel 9 had some talking heads on saying, oh, well, you know, it's really sad that we've elected our prime minister and we elected them for a term and it's being taken away from us. Maybe we should have the American system and elect a president. Yeah, because that's worked out brilliantly for America. Anyway, and this idiocy that we've elected a prime minister. No, we haven't. What we did vote for, and ignoring the fact that our single-member electorate system does mean that we
parties
over the line with far less than half the people voting for them.
Is this podcast full of multi-member electorate talk? Because I'm pretty sure that was part of something wonky as well. I'm not sure you can... God, I'm making a list.
Yeah, but you don't hold the copyright.
You'll be hearing from my lawyers. Sorry.
Yeah. Multiple lawyers. Anyway, no, sorry, my point was... Sorry, the reference to that was just like, it's not like actually a majority of people have voted for this government anyway. They have a majority of seats just, but they have a minority of actual votes. But the point is that if they voted for something, they voted for the policy platform that the party put before the last election. And I don't remember them telling us that they were planning on giving billions of dollars to the biggest companies in tax cuts. I don't recall that. Like, if we're going to be outraged about the things that have changed since we voted for them, what about the, isn't it far more substantial, the changed bloody policies that they snuck in as soon as they didn't have to worry about an election. Like, sod the leader. It's the policies that are a problem.
And this is the thing. It's ultimately, Dutton, Turnbull, Abbott, they're all on the same page when it comes to the policies that they are happy to endorse, that they are trying to get into the parliament.
Trumbull just is forced into them because he's a complete...
I don't believe that.
I don't know why he didn't learn this from Gillard. If Trumbull wanted to become prime minister when Abbott was imploding, he should have sat back. He should have seen what happened to Gillard when she took over from Rudd, but had to do it with all these deals with the right, so she had to be completely inauthentic. Each of them should have waited longer and said, nah, if you want me and the popularity I have, it's because of where I am on the spectrum now. I'm not going to take over by abandoning who I am, because that isn't going to work.
Hang on, what makes you think that we are seeing anything other than Malcolm Turnbull as who he is? Malcolm Turnbull is tax cuts for big business. Malcolm Turnbull is beating up on welfare recipients. Malcolm Turnbull has led the government that supported him. He has pushed the policies.
All the economic stuff, yes, but having to have a nasty public vote for marriage equality, that sort of thing. Like, there's things that he's done. He promised. He said, I don't want to be a leader of a party that's not as committed to climate change as I am. Although, to be fair, he isn't the leader of that party. He's just a member of it.
Hang on. That was what he said as opposition leader. Like, that's 2009 Malcolm Turnbull?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are way, way beyond that. Malcolm Turnbull doesn't care about climate change.
Oh, clearly he doesn't. He's like sold out absolutely everything. I think most of his policy positions have been, well, not really, because being gutless to the right is effectively the same as if he believed them himself. Like, it's morally reprehensible, whether he's doing it out of political expediency or because he's just cartoonishly evil. Like, either way, the effect is the same. So I don't have a huge amount of sympathy for him. Do you think, what about the idea of Morrison coming in? If Trumbull is dead and not enough people will switch to Dutton, the idea of Morrison coming in, like, then we have the choice between the two most evil immigration ministers the country's ever had as prime minister. But yeah, that's the other one. He's out there hugging Trumbull today, but...
Have you got a lisp? Can you not say Turnbull? Is there something I'm missing?
Have you forgotten the Trumbull thing? No, Trumbull is the disrespectful name for him.
Oh,
remember
that's
when Trump
right.
Trump couldn't yes. stop getting his name?
That's right.
I don't feel that Turnbull deserves to be referred to by his proper name anyway. So, no, it's a disrespectful insult, like repeating what the US president called him.
Fair enough. I'm with you now.
Yeah, I'm expressing contempt for him.
Righto.
Is that the only one who remembers the Trumbull thing?
It seems to be.
Well, I will stick to these ancient references for as long as I can. We're still doing the fucking put the potatoes out for... I mean, what are we going to do when Turnbull goes? I don't think any of us have a supply of truffles in our fridge.
Leather jackets.
Remembering that was like, wasn't that originally about a cricketer who died and it was like, put your bats out for
it
him?
Was.
Like, it was an expression of sympathy, and it's a little bit tasteless to be still doing this, like, what, 4 years later?
Probably. Look, it's a mess. It really is, and... The thing that surprises me most is how little blowback Tony Abbott is really receiving in all of this. As, you know, a massive instigator, as someone who, I don't know if he even spent 5 minutes holding to his commitment not to snipe from the back bench.
Well, he's less interesting because he's not actually making the tilt himself. Because it's Dutton, that's kind of, Turnbull becomes less interesting. He's just sort of behind the scenes, but he's, Dutton is... largely unknown.
Well, I don't know.
So they need to humanise him now.
He got 5 more votes than Kevin Andrews did when he tried to spill against Malcolm Turnbull. So, you know, he's at least that much more popular. And look, I think people
I thought you were about to say he got 5 more votes than Fraser Anning, who's not, you know, our special Nazi member of parliament with his 19 votes.
That's not how Senate voting works, and you know it. Stop trying to muddy the water and carry on with ridiculous memes.
He got 19 people to vote for him directly.
That's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, hang on.
Okay, the rest of it is through his membership of a party that he's abandoned as soon as he got into government too. Like,
yeah, that's kind of funny.
Like, neither way did he earn his seat. Like,
no, this is true.
If you're saying his voters are the ones who voted for One Nation, well, he abandoned that party, so...
This is true, but the whole... This is how many first preferences this Senate candidate got is a silly reflection on all the candidates and it does us no service to try to use that as a way to hold up, you know, whether or not someone deserves to be heard. The reason Fraser Anning doesn't deserve to...
Are you shaming me on my own podcast?
I am. The reason Fraser Anning doesn't deserve to be heard is because he says stupid, bigoted, dangerous things. And he he should not be given a platform to do that.
Oh, but did you hear the whole lot of things he was saying? Like, it wasn't just the Final Solution stuff. It was all this outrageous, you know, we are of British stock and we should remain of Anglo-Celtic stock and cultural Marxists are destroying us. And it was this deranged, like, Reddit rant.
If he wants to say that, he should get a podcast and start selling supplements like everyone else on the right. He shouldn't be in the Australian Senate. But the fact that the way that all of our parties approach Senate voting, which is never about the individual, it's always about above the line, means that it's got to die.
I get that's not his the main criticism of him.
It doesn't help. It's like, you know, like the joke about correcting the spelling of when Nazis say, oh, you're going to the camps, and, you know, the lefties going, lol, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E.
Missing the point there. But by the way, sorry, on Nazis, before we move on past this, so we got back from Canada and you've had Blair Cottrell, you had an actual out-and-out Nazi on Sky, you've had Fraser Anning declaring that he wants a Final Solution to immigration in Parliament, and then you've got Paul Murray, then backed up by Peter Van Onselen, who's supposedly taken as a credible political journalist, and was a bloody political science lecturer, declaring that Nazism is akin to socialism. It's a form of socialism.
It's a branch, Jeremy. It's a branch.
The hell is happening to our country?
Well, what's happening is Van Onselen...
It has socialism in the name, Dave.
Well, and you know. Now, look, here's the interesting thing. That's all that Murray was going on about, because Murray was just being a troll. And, you know, so he was doing the whole, it says they were national socialists, so therefore, you know, they're actually lefties. Van Onselen wasn't making that argument. He was making another argument that I don't think was any less ridiculous. But
that any kind of government control is socialism because they believe it. So
pretty much.
So that government providing public services is the same as government as authoritarian militarist nationalists.
Yeah, basically. But
government as master is the same as government as servant. Yeah, no, those are opposites, you muppet.
The crazy thing was he didn't use the term, but he basically came out and endorsed, and this is going to be a very, very deep cut for about one listener out there, he endorsed the idea of the horseshoe theory as put forward by Leon Bertrand quite famously until it was deleted from Wikipedia for not having any sourcing apart from his own blog.
It is so idiotic. Hello
to everyone who remembers Grodd's Corp.
The ABC then published some actual historians pointing out how absurd this was. And one of the points they make is, wait a minute, if you're saying that the Second World War was a fight against socialism, ignoring the fact that we fought with the actual, like, Soviet Union, but on the basis that socialism is any kind of strong government, are you suggesting that the very strong wartime military governments of the Allies were also socialist or Nazi?
What's even more ridiculous is the fact that the entire thing that built prosperity throughout the post-World War II West was the democratic socialist policies that we saw.
Which the soldiers returning from the war voted for.
Absolutely.
Well, how weird for them to fight against Nazis and then vote for Nazi policies like healthcare and public services and,
And you look in the US, like there was a massive wealth transfer to returning soldiers through access to low-cost loans for housing, for access to education. And this is the... Jeremy, I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but this is one of the things that is causing so many problems that we're seeing now in the 21st century is the dismantling of these systems which built so much prosperity in the name of neoliberalism and economic rationalism. Like, that's the heart of our problems.
And also in relation to this specific problem that people are gullible enough to believe Nazis were socialists rather than people who exterminated the socialists is the underfunding of the education system, which makes it easy to sell that bullshit.
So if we do see Prime Minister Dutton take the stage sometime soon,
We have media out there claiming Nazism is the same as the left.
We've passed that magic date at the start of August where he can call a simultaneous half-Senate election along with the House of Reps. And he's got until, I think it's partway through May next year to make that work. So,
one last thing on the Nazi thing?
Yeah.
The other thing that drives me bonkers about this is, say they were right and the Nazis had done some things that lefties agree with. Like, say the Nazis had you know, good public education or good public... They didn't. It's nonsense. They actually ran a corporate state. But say that that had happened and that they'd done those good public service type things. That wouldn't mean that those things are evil. The Nazis aren't evil because of that shit. They're evil for the militarism, the nationalism, the extermination of people, the racism, the xenophobia, all the right-wing shit. So even if there had been some lefty things, which there really weren't, but even if there had been, that's not the evil shit that we excoriate the Nazis for. That's not why we fought them. We didn't go to war with them because they had a public education system. We went to war with them because they were invading the world exterminating people.
Pretty much.
It's insane. Okay, back to Trumbull. Isn't the power play for Malcolm the obvious thing he needs to do? Since it's clearly, we're recording this obviously Wednesday night, clearly on Thursday, Dutton's going to challenge. Or if he doesn't, it'll be in a few weeks, but it'll probably be tomorrow. Surely what Turnbull should do right now is call a bloody election. The party can't really roll him after an election's call. They can, but it would be really suicidal. Once the election's called, it's kind of on, and that's his only chance of remaining Prime Minister to fight an election and somehow win. And also, you know, hopefully save Australia from Prime Minister Dutton. But surely that is the obvious power play for Turnbull. But then on the other hand, it is totally in keeping with Turnbull's entire political life to wuss out of that and give us Prime Minister Dutton as the last thing he does. Like, that totally fits everything Turnbull's done in public life. But isn't he aware of the option he has and that it's his only hope?
He's not good at politics. He has been in the federal parliament for a fair while now. It still astonishes me that people's default position on Malcolm Turnbull isn't that he is very, very bad at politics.
I'm actually coming to the conclusion that he's actually very, very stupid.
Not just a little bit, like a massive bit. Peter Dutton, the man who is openly trying to roll him right now, Peter Dutton... When Malcolm Turnbull first took over the leadership of the Liberal Party, Dutton offered to hand in his resignation. Now, at that stage, I think he was still health minister, if memory serves. Basically, offered to go off the front bench because he didn't support Turnbull. Turnbull had this perfect opportunity. He didn't, he didn't have to push anything himself. All he had to do was accept Dutton's resignation, let him go to the back bench. There's no worry about, he's going to agitate against me. He's going to do that anyway, even while he's in cabinet. So you might as well give him a much lower profile than he's got.
I do love that Turnbull's entire approach to Dutton has been, well, maybe if I give him all of the police forces and complete control over Australia, maybe he'll leave me alone?
He's an idiot. It is a really, really stupid strategic idea. You know, and then this week... We see, again, more people offering their resignations because they did not vote for Malcolm Turnbull.
My local Muppet, Michael Suka.
Only for Turnbull to turn around and say, no, it's all right. You can keep your front bench positions. You can stay in cabinet. But I would like a pledge from you that you won't vote against me again.
How weak could he be?
The fact that he believes for even a second that anyone is going to stand by that pledge when they are pressured by their colleagues.
No, it's binding. They promised me. I really want to play a game of diplomacy against Malcolm Turnbull. He would be slaughtered in like the first... I've never actually got to play diplomacy, but I understand that you could get slaughtered in the first round. And if so, Malcolm Turnbull would definitely be slaughtered in the first round. And then he would chuck a tantrum and be like, but you promised that you were going to support me.
I would like to know how he is so sure about these pledges. Like, did they pinky promise? Did they swear in blood? Did they spit on their hands and then shake on it? Like, there is something there that
he
obviously...
He got them to write out a contract.
Oh, God. The only even marginally strategically clever thing that Turnbull did today was the ridiculous press conference with Matthias Cormann and Scott Morrison, where he basically strapped ScoMo to himself, much like...
ScoMo like reached around him and hugged him, didn't he?
Just like Odysseus strapping himself to the mast so that, you know, he couldn't be tempted by the sirens. Malcolm was strapping ScoMo to him so that he couldn't run off to be the consensus candidate.
Well, there's a cartoon for tomorrow. Nicely drawn. It's just staggering that he can't see that that is his only hope.
I have some speculation about why I think that's the case. On Insiders a couple of weeks ago, Nikki Sava pointed out that by, I think, mid-September, Malcolm Turnbull would become the longest-serving Prime Minister since 2007. And I bet he wants that. He wants to be PM.
Hang on. Longer than somebody hanging on to be the longest Prime Minister ever. But since 2007?
Because
that is a fairly long, like, he's not going to get into the history books for
But he wants to at least be there longer than Gillard. Because, I mean, you know that it chafes Tony Abbott every single day that he got thrown under the bus by his own party faster than Kevin Rudd did.
Yeah, well, if he's worried about chafing, he could wear something slightly less revealing. Which reminds me, all the stuff that's happening now where the media are particularly the Murdoch press, are trying to suddenly humanise Peter. Unfortunately, Annabelle Crabb isn't around with Kitchen Cabinet to, you know, get him to cook her a nice laksa or something and pretend that he's, no, I'm totally down with the foreign foods. But the humanising him stuff is absolutely nauseating. None of it pointing out, you know, the number of children that just in the last few weeks who are close to death have had to be transported to Australia with his department fighting tooth and nail to keep them on Nauru to die.
Yeah, it's and that's not going to go away. Like, he's not going to be able to hide that. Bill Shorten must literally be going out and buying lotto tickets by the barrow load, because you could not script like anything better for him. I mean, what astonishes me is that over in the echo chamber that is Sky News After Dark, mate, they are absolutely dead certain that Peter Dutton is the conservative saviour of Australia, and he's going to be the person to put us on the right track.
Yeah, the far right track.
But here's the thing, like clearly this is the only media that these people who are supporting Dutton are consuming, and they think that they're tapped into the mainstream, and they are so not.
Meanwhile, though, we're relying on the Liberals have done such a good job of cowing the ABC that they're cowed. But I was particularly annoyed today on the subject of the people, journalists suddenly praising Dutton, to hear Patricia Cavellis from Radio National Drive, I think. But she was talking to Raph Epstein on the Melbourne version. And, well, this is what she said.
So you think it's unusual for Peter Dutton to be admitting today on radio, yes, I am making calls?
I think it is absolutely extraordinary. Also, I said very controversially on, you know, the Twitter machine today that I was impressed by it in some ways, because one thing I find incredibly frustrating as a journalist is when politicians say things publicly and they tell me something else, or I know it out. I'm not claiming always they tell me, but sometimes, and I know something else privately. And, you know, you can't reveal your sources, you don't want to, and you think, I know, so that's not true.
Let me ask you,
at least he's just telling us.
Is that the secret sauce they're looking for? Because I heard from people yesterday that there were resignations coming. They see it as the honourable thing to do.
Okay, I know it's not a surprise that journalists prefer to protect their sources than call bullshit on them. But the fact that Cavellis is quite overtly there declaring, I repeat things that I know are not true. I amplify them because I think that my promise to keep some politician's admission to me that he's lying, I think that's more important than my duty to the audience to not spread those lies. Like, I think the journalists have completely lost the idea of what sources are, what sources need protecting and what sources don't. Whistleblowers need protecting because otherwise the information doesn't come out and we don't have any legal protections for them. So, yes, you need to protect your sources who are whistleblowers. But politicians saying to you, that thing I'm about to say in public, it's not true, They're not whistleblowing information. First of all, it's not information. It's a lie. Secondly, they're not releasing anything that we need to know. They are just using you to trap at bullshit. I am staggered that she's like, oh, no, I feel very uncomfortable. I don't enjoy that. Well, don't bloody do it. Make it clear that you're not going to be used that way. Say to them, I'm not. If you tell me something what you're about to say is untrue, I've got a duty to the people who are listening to me. My credibility relies on my listeners knowing that I'm not going to repeat things I know are lies. But apparently, they think that's fine.
I'm just a bit shocked that you're shocked.
No, I'm not shocked that it happens. I'm shocked that she was quite so overt about it. And then, look, I'm not a crank who just, like, while driving along listening to the radio, then rings up the radio station.
And argues.
Yes. So this next bit of audio is some kind of optical illusion with sound.
Jeremy's in Mernda wanting to address something that Patricia Carvella said. What is it, Jeremy?
Hi. Two things, both about sort of the honesty remarks that Patricia was just made. One of them is about Peter Dutton apparently being honest because he was declaring that he was telling her what he was planning on doing. But he's the same person who says, I stopped the boat, then in the next breath says, but they're still coming. There's some credibility issues there. But I'm most concerned about what Patricia just said about that she has politicians saying to her stuff behind off the record.
Yes.
And then something else on the record that she knows
sometimes that
true.
Happens, yeah, sure.
And she knows that's not true. And this isn't, you know, protecting a whistleblower source. These aren't people who are, you know, revealing information that threatens their jobs. These are politicians using the media to amplify something that's not true. I don't know why journalists rank getting that access to politicians telling them things that aren't true over telling the public. I would have thought that a journalist should be saying to a politician who's saying that, I'm not here to cover for you.
That's true.
If you're telling
well,
me
Jeremy,
that's not true,
you have to trust the journalists, and all I can do is say listen to someone or read someone or watch someone over time. You have to trust that they have got their audience's interests uppermost in their mind. I mean, every time anybody tells you about any story, you have to question their motives. Sometimes you don't always know what their motives are. It's not possible to check every story. You've got to just trust a journalist over time.
I hear that, but what I'm concerned about was that what Patricia was just saying is that she specifically has people tell her things in public, in private, and then...
Sometimes. She said that happens sometimes, yes. It happens to me as well. Happens to all of us.
And that in that situation, she doesn't feel that her higher duty is to the public to say, that's not true. She feels that her higher duty is to tell to the politician who has told her that he's lying. Or she's lying.
Well, it depends what you're told, doesn't it? Michael Brissenden and others famously were told something by Peter Costello and then when he was Treasurer, and then something came out and they felt in that instance it was worth breaching it. But you've got to trust... it's an imperfect system, Jeremy. You've got to trust us to believe that we'll blow their cover when it's appropriate.
Shouldn't journalists distinguish between sources who are revealing... They're a whistleblower. People who are revealing something that we need to know about something that's going on. And that sort of source desperately needs protection because we don't have any whistleblower protection.
We should, Jeremy, but also I mean, you're going to have to trust me. It's not always that simple. Look, I don't know if that's a satisfactory answer. Things aren't nearly that black and white a lot of the time. Sometimes they are. We're part of the system. I completely, fully accept it. 10 minutes to six in a moment.
So seriously, Raf Epstein's like, well, no, you've just got to trust us, even though we just told you we will repeat lies.
I just love how you got I love listening for the background noise, as you can just hear everything from your phone just gradually disappearing as Raf's decided it's time to move on.
Call it Jeremy. Make my second point. I'm like, can we distinguish between actual whistleblowers and just sources who are spreading nonsense, political nonsense? Like, surely journalists could distinguish between them. Yes, he didn't let me make the second point.
Very true. I think you would be a fool to try to guess where they're going to go.
Right, you don't think it's inevitable that it's Dutton tomorrow?
I don't think it's inevitable, so that probably consigns this podcast to laughability.
Something wonky effect. Look, whatever we do now, like, this is literally the something wonky effect, because, like, it has to happen tomorrow. We're basically forcing it to happen.
Now you know why I used to insist that we record on a Thursday, not a Wednesday.
Really, you say we should have recorded on a Friday.
The thing is, regardless of what changes they do or don't make, like if you want to try and predict things, you should probably look for the most venal and ridiculous option that's most likely to be correct in Australian politics. However,
and also, given that the vote tomorrow is between members of the Liberal Party, rely on the outcome being the worst one possible.
However, we have to have, realistically speaking, we have to have an election before the end of May next year. There is already a Morgan poll out showing that while Turnbull is a higher in preferred Prime Minister to Bill Shorten, Bill Shorten outscores quite handily Peter Dutton. You put that together with the fact that the ALP have consistently been ahead in the two-party preferred polls, and they're getting pretty close too in terms of first preferences. We are due to see a change of government before
too
long.
Which is, of course, why they're panicking, because they think that that's, they're finally grokked that that's likely. The thing that worries me about the two-party preferred thing is the Dutton line that he gave. We played the audio a couple of episodes back, where he was being asked, Neil Mitchell or somebody. It was Ray or Alan Jones or somebody was saying, like, you know, you're losing, and the simple maths is that the polls are saying you're going to be thrashed. And Dutton's response was, well, remember that the polls were all saying John Howard was going to get smashed in 2001. And, you know, then he came back. Because Peter Dutton remembering that is not a reassuring thing, because Peter Dutton clearly remembers exactly how Howard achieved that switch around, which was Tampa and then 9/11.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear. And if Turnbull has any regard at all for the cohesiveness of Australian society, any regard, he will call an election rather than let Dutton run the nasty, bigoted, destructive campaign that he and his supporters would absolutely be there for.
I know the people who are like, "Oh, Dutton can't possibly become prime minister." You know, it's like when Tony Abbott became the leader of the Libs, and everybody's like, "Ah, cool, they can't possibly win." I'm not that cavalier about the possibility of Dutton using the worst impulse of Australians to somehow get back in. And I'm also, like, it's all very well for, white men to be like, oh, well, look, you know, we're willing to give it a shot. He probably can't win. But we're not the ones who are going to be being demonised. Like,
and this is the point. Like, there was a lot of discussion, quite rightly so, around the damage of the plebiscite around marriage equality to the LGBTI community. That would have absolutely, opened up a lot of hurt and a lot of scars. It's still one of the most disgusting things that Turnbull can put his name to as Prime Minister. And it's a reasonably long list.
I think he genuinely will try to pretend that he was the person who gave us marriage equality.
Oh, absolutely. Of course he will. But here's the point. The kind of hurt that was inflicted upon this part of our community.
Harm. Flat-out harm. Not just hurt, like genuine harm.
We will absolutely see that in spades from Peter Dutton, as every minority community in Australia is demonised, is held up as being the source of problems throughout our country. Like, I could absolutely, absolutely see Peter Dutton trying as much as possible to play from a Trump-style election playbook.
That's the place in which who is the leader matters. So, as it happens, Turnbull's pretty much given the right all the policies they wanted anyway. But the thing that the leader, the thing that will change, Peter Dutton's already there doing evil shit. Or not now, because he's in the backbench temporarily, but has been there doing the evil shit. But what changes if he becomes leader is that for that period, while before anybody starts whitehating, like the bit when he's the new leader and everybody has to support him, that means that all of the Liberal MPs have to do their best to be like the leader, do their Peter Dutton. That those are the lines. That's the angle we are now. We are not the party of Malcolm Dutton. We're the party of Peter Dutton, and we all have to, like, even the members of the Liberal Party who are a bit uncomfortable with the cartoonish evil xenophobia that Dutton represents, will have to ape it. That's when somebody becomes leader, like, they taint all of the MPs in the party. They all have to sort of be part of that team now with that leader and that leader's branding.
Paul Keating, you know, said it quite clearly back in 1996 when he was warning about the possibility of John Howard becoming Prime Minister. And he said, you change the government, you change the country. Like, it is just so, so true. And I'm not for a moment going to pretend that, you know, the early 90s was some kind of utopia where migrants and Indigenous people were put on a pedestal and fated. That's certainly not the case. However,
but Keating did introduce mandatory detention in the first place in 92.
Yeah, mandatory detention that didn't last for, like, years and years on end. Like,
don't defend it. It was appalling. It should not have happened. Obviously, the Libs have made it worse, but don't defend the idea of mandatory detention in the first place. It's
you're sounding like a Republican who's going, you know, we freed the slaves. Anyway,
what
the point?
No, I don't think I am. Like,
the point being,
you're defending Labor doing something terrible and being like, well, you know, it's not as bad as the Libs.
Yes, they introduced mandatory detention, but that was not even remotely on the scale of what happened on Curtin and places like that that Howard set up.
They're definitely down the path further. I know. I'm surprised that we're. This is not what I thought we'd be arguing about. clearly, what you've said is that you expect that if Malcolm Turnbull knew what was good for the country, he would call an election immediately and save us from Peter Dutton.
So absolutely.
That means that it is inevitable that he won't do that, and Peter Dutton will be Prime Minister at some point tomorrow.
Yes, I would say so. So, again, while everyone is listening to this, I don't know.
Depending on how long it takes me to edit it in the morning.
A few days hence, going, you idiots. Because, of course, they already know what the result is. But...
Lol. They thought it was going to be Dutton. In actual fact, it was like Satan himself.
It's Kevin Andrews again.
I don't know what the odds are on it being ScoMo or something, but, like, isn't that one of the great things about Peter Dutton? And I say that very sarcastically, but that Peter Dutton has somehow managed to make Scott Morrison seem less than evil. Like, less. Peter Dutton has somehow managed to make Scott Morrison to soften the image of the evil Scott Morrison who caused so much harm when he was Immigration Minister.
Not just that. Scott Morrison, who, when he was still in opposition, you berated the federal government for taking people to the funerals of their family members.
Yeah. So Peter Dutton is a man who can make Scott Evil Morrison seem comparatively benign. Like, that is... And that would be our Prime Minister? That is absolutely terrifying. Anyway, I'm glad to have brought you back on a high note and a glorious happy time in our country's history. Thank you, Dave, for coming back. Apparently we're doomed to specifically have episodes with each other whenever there's some kind of chaos in the leadership. Even though neither of us really cares who the leader is.
I didn't know this was going to be a podcast. I thought we were just having a chat.
Dave, you know that I record every conversation that we have and upload it to the internet.
I do. I've just taken it for granted by now.
But then again, so does Peter Dutton.
What?
He's already got our conversation, and I mean, he hasn't uploaded it to the internet, but he's like stored it away on a database somewhere. Anyway, thank you for joining me again. It has been lovely reminiscing about previous appalling times that we have somehow managed to get even worse from.
Yeah,
good, isn't it?
Look, every now and again, someone sort of says to me, like, "Oh, you know, why did you stop doing something wonky?" And it's like, have you seen the state of our politics? Like, oh dear, it's.
I understand you can only do it in like short bursts.
I can. Only so much. You know, I've been trying to go towards a life of equanimity, Jeremy, and talking about Australian politics does not help that.
That said, thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers who enjoy listening to this podcast week after week. We encourage you to continue doing that. Thank you
for
the way that the podcast keeps going. We're glad that you enjoy hearing about Australian politics, notwithstanding what that actually means. So thank you for coming back. Welcome again. Thank you to everybody who has left a positive review for the podcast on iTunes. Thank you, Robin Gray, for the music, and Alex Lum for the artwork. And Dave, thank you for coming back. And I guess maybe we'll do a live something wonky at the inevitable upcoming election.
Oh, goodness gracious. Elections. Yeah.
Hey, dude, the election is the only way that we get rid of this evil mob. Like, that's
something
to look forward to.
I know.
And then we just go back to the, you know, being constantly disappointed by Labour doing terrible things.
Yeah.
And reassuring ourselves, we're like, well, I guess at least they're not the Liberals. I wonder if Marique's got her image already up of Prime Minister Bill Shorten with "Don't fuck it up" underneath it.
Oh, that is a discussion for another podcast. All right. I'll catch you later.
On a high note. Cheers, mate. Bye.